What's good? What's good? It's C-Wood. Back at you again with another edition of Ball About the South with C-Wood. Ball About the South, that sports podcast where we talk the SEC. We talk the HBCUs, the NFL, the NBA, and a lot of other stuff in between. I am your host, Kerry Wood, but just call me C-Wood for short, at C-Wood on sports on Twitter and IG. That's where you can find me. And I am just thrilled to have you join me again for another additional Ball About the South. And no matter what platform you're listening to the show on, especially if it's Apple or if it's Spotify, I would definitely appreciate you liking, subscribing on both those platforms. I know that you can leave me a rating, and I would hope it would be a 5-star rating, but if it's not, that's all good too. I would just like the feedback to know what you think about Ball About the South. And we're on just about any platform that you can think of. So wherever you're listening to, I definitely welcome you in. And I hope this, if this is your first time, I definitely hope that it is not your last. Anyway, obviously we got a lot to talk about this weekend. Well, from this past weekend's football and everything else that we have going on in the sports world. Again, we do it from a Southern perspective, so we're gonna get into the SEC today, and we're gonna do that first up. We have really a couple really good ball games over the past weekend, which was week 4 in college football. The college football season really starting to slide by, man. I mean, time just flying and flying and flying, and will not slow down at all. I mean, obviously, you know the college football season is the shortest of the major sports. And that is really the only bad thing about college football. I mean, as far as from a fan perspective, I think. Everything else, there are very few negatives as far as just the experience of watching the sport. Just to know that it just doesn't last that damn long. That is the biggest thing that I don't like, but regardless of that fact, that makes every weekend that much more important. And again, that we had a couple games that really stood out from the rest. We had that big game up at Neyland Stadium in Knoxville, Tennessee Volunteers hosting the Florida Gators. Obviously, we had the other game there in Texas, the Texas A&M Aggies playing the Arkansas Razorbacks on the huge SEC West showdown. We got all of that, man. We're going to break down both of those games. We're going to do that just a little bit later in the show, and we'll be doing so in my Around the SEC segment, which will be coming up shortly. But I want to get into, as you can see, I have the Alabama Crimson Tide on the cover, and I have it labeled Bama Catching Vibes. And I think it's really fitting because I think maybe there was a little bit of a vibe about this Alabama football team finally here in the 2022 season the other night in that 55-3 beatdown, I guess you could say, of the Vanderbilt Commodores. I thought there's no question, and I don't think anyone would really argue that that was the most complete game that we've seen from the Crimson Tide this football season so far. And that is a huge thing. And I don't think there's a coincidence that a lot of it stems, a lot of the success in that football game stems from Alabama being able to throw the football downfield a little bit more than they have in any of the other games so far this season. And so the huge game from Ja'Cory Brooks, had 2 touchdowns from Bryce Young. He went for 117 yards on 6 receptions. There was a couple of long passes at 34 yards. It was a really beautiful pass that he went up and got right there at the goal line on a strike from Bryce Young. That was a really good one. And they hooked up on another pretty long one as well. And again, just Alabama being able to stretch the field is huge. And a lot of people did not think these receivers could get open. They did not think that they had a guy that could really take the top off of the defense. like a Jameson Williams from last season, like maybe a Jalen Waddle in the past, maybe like a Henry Ruggs, you know, someone like that. And again, I'm not, you know, not necessarily saying that Jacory Brooks is that guy, but obviously made a couple plays to make you think that he possibly could be a guy that you can lean on going forward. And again, that is just as important. Now, Alabama has a couple guys that are coming back here in the next couple of weeks that really should help things along. One of those guys is JoJo Earl, who I know can kind of take the top off the defense, and Nick Saban was really praising him a lot coming into the season, but unfortunately he got injured. But he should be getting on the should be pretty much on the fast track to being back here. He was looking at a 6 to 8 week injury, and that was back in early August. So we're here at the end of September now. And we were thinking maybe Arkansas week, maybe A&M or Tennessee week. Hopefully we'll get JoJo Earl back. And there are a couple other guys that are some speedsters that we have not seen in action yet that the Alabama Crimson Tide should be getting back here pretty soon. That should help things along. But the fact that the passing game looked a lot better, I thought was absolutely really good to see for Alabama fans. I'm sure for Nick Saban and the coaching staff. Another guy that we've been waiting on to kind of catch a vibe with Bryce Young was Jermaine Burton, the transfer from Georgia. I mean, he had really been pretty much a no-show, man, to be honest with you, in the first 3 weeks of the season. He did not have a touchdown the other night, but he had a long 48-yard pass. Now, it was, to be fair, okay, and to be real, because that's what we try to do on this show, man. I try to be as real and as objective as I possibly can, even though I'm a huge Alabama fan. And if you don't know that, if this is the first time you're listening to the show, I definitely am a huge Alabama fan, no question about that. But try to keep it real. And the coverage was a little bit of a breakdown from Vanderbilt there on the pass right near the end of the first half. So, and Jermaine Burton was able to get behind the defense. So it wasn't like, you know, it was just good to see the pass. It was good to see them hook up. It was good to see Bryce Young and Jermaine Burton on the same page. I think that was the bigger thing, more so than it was a 48-yard pass that, you know, it was that kind of helped stretch the field or whatever, if that makes any sense. But just Jermaine Burton touching the football. I mean, he had 94 yards on 4 catches the other night. And he has 155 yards total for the season. So that tells you he only had 62 yards total in the first 3 games. So, again, I thought that Jacory Brooks, and this is the guy that caught the big touchdown there to tie up the Iron Bowl last season down there in Auburn. I really was looking for big things from him, and it was really good to see him come along. But a lot of people obviously were looking for a lot of things from Burton as well. So to get those two guys, and again, I understand it was Vanderbilt. Okay, I get it. It was Vanderbilt, but I think this Vanderbilt team may not be too bad. Again, I don't know if they'll win another game. I mean, I think that they'll probably get Missouri. From what we've seen from Missouri, and what we saw this past Saturday, we'll get into that here in a few minutes, what we saw in that game in Auburn, whatever that was we saw from Auburn the other day. Vanderbilt, maybe they get another win. I really like what I've seen out of Clark Lee's football team, though. Regardless of what happens to that football team from here on out, this Vanderbilt team is very much improved. They came into this game 3-1, and look, I think they deserve the respect that we should give them, man. Again, coming in here and playing the Alabama Crimson Tide, number 2 ranked team in the country, is not easy feat. And, again, you sit there and you get beat 55-3, obviously it doesn't look good at all. But I'm not going to sit here and bang on them for that score. I like what I've seen out of that football team. I like that quarterback that they have. And I think he's a young guy. So there's some good days ahead for this Vanderbilt team. I would love it if they could win 3 more games and get to a bowl. I just don't know if that's going to happen. But, again, it's a little bit better football team than I think people are giving them credit for being. So, anyway, but that said, you know, again, the main thing here is Alabama really getting some rapport between Bryce Young and his receivers. That is the biggest thing right now. And I think once you get that going, man, you kind of open everything up. I thought the running game looked a lot better. Again, it was Vanderbilt. When they did run, they didn't run it a whole lot the other night. And, of course, you know, this Bill O'Brien thing, everybody wants to sit here and continue to come down on him. I think Alabama only run it like 8 times. They only run 8 running plays in the first half on Saturday night. So there was a complaint about that. But I thought it was clear that Alabama was trying to focus on trying to get these guys acclimated with each other. Because, I understand you're going to need your running game. But guess what? If you don't find some way to stretch the field, you don't find some way to keep these defenses honest and kind of spread them out a little bit, this not going to be a running game. And we saw that in the Texas game. Until, you know, they kind of spread things out. They kind of did some things with Bryce to get him out of the pocket and things of that nature. And they were able to score a few points and actually win the game. But again, that's not going to work in these games. This next 3 weeks especially, really. Because we're in the meat of Alabama's schedule right now. We've got the Arkansas Razorbacks coming up this coming Saturday in Arkansas. After that, you come back home, you play Texas A&M with that defense. Say what you want about A&M's offense. But the defense is legit. Okay? Then after that, you get Tennessee, and we saw what the Tennessee Vols. Now, maybe their defense isn't that good, but you better have some scoring with you. You better put some points on the board when you go to Neyland Stadium. And then it goes on and on from there. You got Old Mississippi State. You got LSU. You got Ole Miss. 2 of those games on the road. So, this is the meat of the schedule. This is these next 6 weeks, and then a bye week in between there, in between that Mississippi State and LSU game at the end of October. This is your season right now for Alabama. So it's time to, you've got to start identifying playmakers. And that's, I've been saying all week, really the last couple of weeks, the difference between Georgia and Alabama right now is the fact that we can identify a playmaker. We can identify, or Georgia has an identity offensively. And I don't think Alabama had that identity until Saturday night. And again, I don't know if you really can say that Alabama's identity is clear, but I think it's a little bit clearer than it was before last Saturday night. So I think that is a really good thing going forward. So we'll see. Again, Alabama's starting to catch some vibes, and literally catching some vibes with those receivers and Bryce Young kind of getting on the same page. On the other end of the state, there's not much of a vibe, man. There's not much of a vibe at all on the other side of the state. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk about the Auburn Tigers and that crazy game with the Missouri Tigers, and we'll get into the rest of the SEC when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all, we're back in. Ball About the South continues, and we're going to get into my Around the SEC segment. Yes, sir, SEC, and we're about to go around the SEC right here on Ball About the South. We did go with Alabama here in the opening segment of the show. We talked about them and how it was really quite possibly the best performance so far of the year for the Crimson Tide. But now it's time to go to the other side of the state where things are not so good. And I'm talking about, of course, the Auburn Tigers, who came away with a 17-14 victory over the Missouri Tigers But you wouldn't know it. I mean, you would not know that Auburn actually won that football game by what's going on with the talk about Brian Harsin and the talk of the, you know, their alumni and their fans and everything going on in the media. You would have thought that Auburn lost that game 40-17. I mean, not, you know, this, it's crazy right now. I get it, though, because I don't know. In all the years I've been sitting here watching sports, man, especially the SEC, and when I've seen coaches come and go, I don't know if I've ever seen a guy, Brian Harsin, that is as deep in lame duck status as he is. I don't really know that I've seen a guy. I can't remember anybody that was this deep, and we pretty much knew his fate. I mean, you know, there's just not a whole lot this guy really can do. I thought that was really kind of going to be the case anyway coming into the season because of how sloppy things were within the Auburn program this past year with them allegedly or reportedly trying to get rid of Harsin in the offseason and everything. And now things have gotten even worse when you sit there and look at it. That's the reason why when you have something go down like it did last year in Auburn, a lot of times, man, I don't know of very few times, if any, that everything kind of worked out where the coach actually had a longer career with that franchise, with that school or whatever. I just don't know of one. I'm sure there probably are some cases. They're few and far between. When you get to that level, it's probably, you know, it may be a bad stain on the university, which it would have been. I don't know. I still don't know exactly why they were trying to get rid of Harsin the way they were last year. But more than likely, that would have been the best thing to do is just go ahead and cut ties once things got to the point that they did. And then with Alan Green, the athletic director, the guy who brought Harsin to town, when he left, you knew it was over. This dude has zero chance of being the head coach next year at Auburn. I mean, let's just be real about it. Even if there was a chance, like, okay, you know what, we'll get into this thing and we'll give you another chance. We'll show our confidence or whatever, our support or whatever in the media towards you, and we'll bring you back next year. More than likely, that will come on some conditions and probably be on some conditions of this guy winning some games. If you could not beat Missouri the way Missouri played the other day, I don't know if Auburn has another win on their schedule besides the game that they play, their FCS game that they play before they play Alabama. I don't know that there's definitely no gimmies on there. But I don't know if Auburn wins a game going forward. I really don't. And it starts with this weekend with LSU coming to town. LSU, I kind of debated which team would be better. I was like, okay, you know, because I thought Auburn would be a team that could win 6, 7, maybe 8 games. I thought kind of the same for LSU. But I also thought either one of those teams could possibly finish last in the SEC West. So now I don't think there's any question now that Auburn's going to finish last in the SEC West. And again, this is not all on Brian Harsin. I mean, he's down to 2 quarterbacks right now. 2 scholarship quarterbacks, that is. Or actually, I'm not sure if Garner, I guess that's how you pronounce his name. He was the backup on Saturday that came in after Robbie Ashford went out when it looked like he was injured. He had to go out for a series or two. And I'm not sure if Garner is actually a scholarship quarterback. I'm not really sure. So it may be Ashford may be the only scholar that Auburn has on, you know, left in rotation right now. Because, I mean, T.J. Finley and Calzada actually dressed out. I really don't understand why Calzada dressed out from everybody's saying he's out for the season. I don't get why he dressed out. I thought, okay, maybe TJ Finley, if it became an emergency, you know, Ashford gets hurt and then the backup gets hurt, maybe TJ Finley could come in and hand off the ball or something or whatever. I thought, you know, absolute emergency, maybe TJ Finley could have played or something. I have no idea why Calzada was suited up. I mean, at least that's what I heard. I did not see Calzada. But again, this whole thing is just an absolute mess. And it just got worse on this past Saturday. The Auburn Tigers, they muster up 217 yards. 217 yards for the game, 135 through the air, 82 on the ground. And that's 82 yards for a running back tandem that I think a lot of people would have agreed at the beginning of the season that this could be, if not the best in the SEC, one of the best for sure, and possibly one of the best in the country. And talking about Tank Bigsby, Jarquez Hunter, it's really unbelievable what we have going on with this running game. And obviously, it's because they can't throw the football. We all know that. Everyone is loading up. They're loading the box on, you know, stacking the box, stacking the line of scrimmage on Auburn and daring them to throw the football, and they're not going to do it because they don't trust Robbie Ashford right now to throw the football. And that's where we are, man. I mean, they kind of fooled Missouri there for the first quarter. They jumped out 14-0, and then Missouri made their adjustments, and Auburn did not score again until the overtime. They kicked the field goal during the overtime period to put themselves up 17-14. And then, of course, you all know what happened. Missouri gets the football. They drive, you know, they get not much on first down. Then second down, the running back, he goes through the Auburn defense, gets to the left sideline, gets all the way probably inside the two, I think, decides, you know what, I'm going to stick the football out because I'm not sure that I can get in. I'm going to reach the football out and hope that it'll break the plane. And when he did that, obviously he lost control of the football. He fumbled it. The ball rolls around in the end zone. Auburn scoops it up and secures the victory. I mean, just, and of course, this was after Missouri blew the field goal to win the game in regulation. It's crazy, man. And so Brian Harsin is, you know, his post-game presser, I mean, he's, you know, saying how they fought or whatever and they found a way to win the game. Again, those are things he's supposed to say. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's just that kind of coach speak type of thing. But, dude, you didn't find a way to win the game. You found a bunch of ways to lose it, and Missouri found a way to lose it better. I think that's the better definition of what we saw in that football game this past Saturday in Auburn. Nobody actually sat there and just did anything to really win the game. Crazy. So, again, I'm not really sure how this thing is going to go here in Auburn. You have people already throwing out their list of candidates. I'm not even going to go into that. Their list of candidates to replace Harsin. I mean, this dude is still the head coach. So I'm not going to get into that part. Not too deep, but I am going to talk about one particular guy's name that continues to pop up, and it's been doing so for the last couple of weeks, and that's Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders, yes, Coach Prime. A lot of people are, you know, wanting that to happen. And that's very interesting to me, man. You know, first of all, look, I believe Deion. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm naive. But I believe Deion and what he's saying. And I think that he is going to stay in Jackson State for a little while longer. I'm not saying he's going to stay his entire career. I'm not, you know, I don't know what his career aspirations are as a head coach or whatever. You know, I would not be surprised if he moved on. But I think that he will stick it out at least for a few more years in Jackson State. I really do believe that he wants to push the HBCU game as to a higher level is, or to as high a level as he can go. I really do. And I think he wants to be a guy to help push that along. I really, truly believe that. And if I'm wrong, I'd be the first one to sit on here and get on Twitter or Instagram or whatever and say, look, I was wrong. You know, I don't see him leaving. And I think it would be incredibly crazy for him to go to Auburn at this point. Now, from an Auburn standpoint, it makes a lot of sense because you sit there and you look at the recruiting aspect of it. Deion obviously could help you a lot in a state where you share, you know, where you share the state with Nick Saban, and then you're on the border to Georgia, who obviously has Kirby Smart and the defending national champions, who obviously also recruit at a high level. So, for that matter, it would make sense for them to bring a guy like Deion in that could really be a face that could say, hey, you know what? I mean, come to Auburn, man. You know, this is a pretty good alternative here to come here versus going to Alabama versus going to Georgia. And I tell you, I mean, I think a lot of kids would sit there and think about that. I just really, truly do. So, I don't know. But, again, I'm not going to get too deep in all of that because right now Brian Harsin is still the head coach at Auburn. All of that is going to take care of itself here in due time. It's just I thought it was very interesting that Deion's name continues to come up for that job, possibly. We'll see what happens. So, stay tuned, man. This is to be continued at a later date. And that later date might be pretty soon here. As Auburn just continues, that program right now continues to implode. Looking at a couple of the other games in the SEC West, well, in the SEC as a whole, obviously we had two huge football games this past weekend. One took place in Neyland Stadium there in Knoxville, Tennessee, with the Tennessee Volunteers hosting the Florida Gators. Tennessee coming out a 38-33 victor to go to 4-0, and that was one of those games, man, that the Tennessee Volunteers were looking to get to kind of continue to show that they're back. I'm not going to sit here and say you're back for beating this Florida team. I thought Florida played pretty well in the game. You got a little bit better performance out of Anthony Richardson. That was a really good thing. But this is not a great Florida team or anything like that. So everyone's saying, oh, well, you know, they beat Florida. I understand about getting the monkey off your back to a certain degree. I get that. But this, I don't know that this is the Florida team to sit there and just brag that, okay, yeah, we beat Florida, and especially not beating them in Knoxville. I mean, maybe if it was in Gainesville, I could see it at the Swamp. But, you know, again, I think Tennessee is back anyway. I'm just saying I would not measure it by beating this Florida team. That's what I would say. Now, when I say that Tennessee is back, I'm not saying that they're back to a point where they're ready to contend for a national title or anything like that necessarily. Now, would it shock me? No, because you sit there, you look at what this team can do. You look at Hendon Hooker, that quarterback that they have, and that dude has to be marching up draft stock boards or whatever. He has to be with what his running skills and the way he throws the football. This dude is going to be highly sought after. I don't think there's any question about that. He has weapons. And he did this the other day without Cedric Tillman for much of that football game, which is very impressive. Cedric Tillman went down to injury, so they put 38 points on the board against Florida. And look, not the best Florida team, maybe not the best Florida defense, but 38 points is 38 points any way you slice it against an SEC defense. Really good stuff, man. And, again, like I said, I'm not going to sit here and say that they're not back. But I think that they still have a little bit more to do. Obviously, they still have their big games coming up. Georgia, Alabama, Kentucky. I think Kentucky would be a further barometer. Even if they lost to Georgia and Alabama, here later in the season. They get Alabama here in just a couple of weeks. That's going to be an incredible atmosphere up there in Neyland. Probably going to be a top five matchup at that point. But even if they lose both of those games and they beat Kentucky, I think you can sit there and say, okay, you know what? As long as they don't get blown out in those games, I'll put it like that. But, you know, they are competitive against Georgia and Alabama, and then they beat Kentucky, then, yeah. I mean, I would feel comfortable in saying that they're back. And again, it's been a long time. It's been 24 years since Tennessee has been at a level of competing for a national championship. Okay, so it's been a long time. So I don't know if we're going to see them be that back this season, but it could be coming. It really could be. The other big game, so that was a huge game. But before I get into the other huge game of the weekend, the one thing I don't understand, and we were almost going to have a totally different conversation. I have no earthly idea what Billy Napier, the head coach of Florida, is thinking going for two down 38-27. I have no idea what he was thinking going for two right there. Because all you're going to do is cut the lead to nine. If you get the two-point conversion, it's 38-29. You're still down nine. I don't know of a nine-point play or, you know, a three-point conversion in college. Now, we had the possibility of getting something like that in USFL this past season where there was a possible way for you to get 9 points in a possession. There's no way to do that in the college ranks, NFL, or any other kind of league that you could come up with that I know of that you can do that. So why go for two right there? So they go for two, obviously they don't get it. So it's still 38-27. Should have been 38-28. Then they get the ball back from, you know, off defense. Get the ball back, they score again and make it 38-33, which was the ending score. But if you had kicked the extra point when it was 38-27, it would have been 38-28. That would have made it 38-34. Guess what? You could have gone, just kicked the extra point right there, made it 38-34. You could have, and then obviously they get the onside kick. And they, you know, they actually had a chance with the Hail Mary there at the end of the game. Guess what? You would have, by the time you got the onside kick, you would have been almost in field goal range at 38-35. Because it would have been 38-35 if you had just gone on to kick the extra points. Now, of course, you know, I don't know if the field goal kicker actually would have made the kicks or not. We know how that's gone here in the last few years. But, man, it made no sense for them to go for two, and they possibly gave away a chance where they could have tried a long field goal to tie this thing up and send it to overtime. I don't know why these people, these coaches, man, fascinate themselves with going for two in so crazy a situation like that. I just don't understand it. Anyway, the huge win for the Volunteers. In the other game, man, I'm trying to still figure out why KJ Jefferson tried to reach the ball out. He tried to dive over the top of, you know, like he was Superman over the pile to get into the end zone from the 3-yard line against Texas A&M last Saturday night. Obviously, he gets the ball knocked out, fumbles, A&M picks it up, and you know the rest. The guy that picks it, scooped it up, he hands it off to another guy, number 27, and he's off to the races down the left sideline, and he changed the everything about that football game. Instead of it being 21-7, going into halftime, Arkansas in front, it's 14-13. Texas A&M actually missed the extra point on that, but still the momentum has swung the big time. And A&M had all the momentum going in halftime. They end up getting the lead 20-14. And they wind up hanging on to a 23-21 victory as Arkansas. And then Arkansas still had a chance after that. They missed the field goal, of course, field goal kicker doinked it off the right upright. I mean, right at the very top of the upright. I mean, you could not come any closer to making that field goal than that. And the Arkansas Razorbacks go down and defeat their first loss of the season. And Texas A&M continues to look like maybe they have gotten over that Appalachian State loss. But here's the thing, though, man. Still not a lot of offense when you sit there and look at the Aggies. The offense is still struggling. Again, this defense is legit. There's no question about that. I mean, this defense for Texas A&M is gonna, you know, is gonna keep them in a lot of football games. But the passing offense, Max Johnson did. He had 151 yards passing. Other than that, I mean, just not much at all offensively for the Aggies. Not much at all, man. I mean, you know, talked about Auburn having 217 yards total offense. Texas A&M had 343, but I'm telling you, they probably had most of that in maybe two or three chunk plays. A-Chain made a nice long run. The offense is very weak, very anemic there in Aggie land. Arkansas, KJ Jefferson had a good game other than the fumble, man. So, and now Arkansas has to get that loss off of them. He was 12 of 19, 171 yards through the air, 18 rushes, 105 yards on the ground. Rocket Sanders had 17 rushes, 68 yards himself. Wasn't enough. Two touchdowns from KJ Jefferson through the air and one on the ground. Should have been four touchdowns. And now they have Alabama at home this coming Saturday. We're going to get into that, obviously. Crazy, crazy game there in Jerry's World. That game was played there in Arlington where the Cowboys play. Crazy game there. Look at the other scores in the league from this past Saturday. Georgia had their time. Tough time with Kent State. They finally get away and win that game 39-22. Mississippi State, the other Bulldogs in the conference, 45-14 winners over Bowling Green. Ole Miss moving up in that state a little bit. A little bit of trouble there with Tulsa, 35-27 victory for the Rebels. Kentucky, another game where they kind of just sleepwalk. They win the game, though, against Northern Illinois, 31-23. South Carolina beat Charlotte, 56-20. And LSU beats New Mexico, 38-0, as they go to 3-1. And by the way, everybody talked about that loss opening night, opening Sunday night of the season to Florida State. Florida State Seminoles are now 4-0. Anyway. We're going to take a quick break, man. We're going to come back. We're going to get into the NFL. A lot going on there. Obviously, Tennessee Titans. We're going to go back into that game. The Indianapolis Colts had a pretty good opponent coming into Indianapolis on Sunday. And, of course, the Jacksonville Jaguars. What would they be able to do with Justin Herbert and the Chargers? Seems like quite a lot. We'll talk about it on the other side. All about the South.
I got a big stash, pocket full of cash. Just seen a big old. System on blast, cops just passed. Just seen a big old. From the stove, no more. Moved on up. Double shot, Hennessy and fill my cup. Looter choke smoke in a big black truck. Should I wild out? What the? Act like my rims ain't clean. How you gon' act like my neck don't bling? Haters get sprayed like Afro Sheen, but they don't ever really wanna pop them things. Kang Kang, Sugar Man, Luda don't go. And I stop that I like pulled off so slow. But I'm out for the night, so pass that drove. Till daddy come home in a Cadillac Brome.
Cadillac Brome.
Now don't it sound absurd? Claim Collie Park where they flip them birds. Trick car alarms didn't bend them curves. Chop, chop, chunk it up, fat man. I got a big stash, pocket full of cash. Just seen a big old. see you drop out, that's my love. Keep a couple rolls and I hit the club. In the back door, what? Act like I don't make clouds. How you gon' act like I don't get loud? How you gon' act like I don't rock crowds and leave a lot of people with a gap tooth smile? If I recollect right, then you sound like dirt. But I guess what you don't really know don't hurt. With a vest and a pump, hear the sock squirt. My folks on the block, man, they got that word.
They got that word.
Don't it smell so good in Southwest where they rep that hood? Protect your chest, they up to no good. And come through flossing, they wish y'all would. I got a big stash, pocket full of cash. Just seen a big old system on blast, cops just passed. Just seen a big old worldwide hustlers, get that dough. Work that tip, get rid of evidence, move that. Keep a D eagle with an extra. Think it ain't so? Act like I just do rap. How you gon' act like I just ain't strapped? How you gon' act like I don't push lax? Black Eldorado fifth wheel on back. Itchy finger trigger man, Luda don't squeeze. But I'ma make him say please. And I'm back on the block so the cops say freeze. And I'm so high I think I got a nosebleed.
You got a nosebleed?
Don't it smell so sweet in Decatur where they pack that heat and rob neighbors in the night creep creep? I'll see you later, we'll be in them streets. I got a big stash, pocket full of cash. Just seen a big old system on blast, cops just passed. Just seen a big old I got a big stash, pocket full of cash. Just seen a big old system on blast, cops just passed. Just seen a big old
All right, y'all, we're back in Ball About the South, and it's time to get into the NFL. And what a weekend we saw in the National Football League here with the AFC and NFC South, of course. And, you know, those are the two leagues or two conferences or two divisions, rather, that we focus on the most. So let's get into both of them and the action that we saw this past Sunday. The Tennessee Titans, let's get into them first. Coming off that huge, huge loss, ugly loss, Monday Night Football to the Buffalo Bills, they had the Las Vegas Raiders coming to town for a noon kick, and both those teams came to the game 0-2, and we all know the talk. We all know the the stats. I don't know if we know the exact stats right off the top of our head, but we know the teams that are 0-2, and then especially 0-3 have a really big time problem making the playoffs or even being a wild card team or whatever. So obviously this was a huge game, very important game for the Tennessee Titans, and they come out with that 24-22 victory over the Raiders. The Raiders having the ball there at the end, just inside a minute, a little over a minute to go, and they go for two, they get the touchdown to Mac Hollins there in the back of the end zone to make it 24-22. Then they go for the two, obviously, to tie the game up. They weren't able to do so, and the Titans, the Raiders were without timeouts at that point. And all the Titans had to do was field the onside kick, which they were able to do so successfully, and then run out the clock and get their huge win and get their first victory of the season. The Titans actually came in 2-point dogs at home to the Raiders. So a lot of people, I guess Las Vegas believes in Las Vegas. They believe still a little bit in the Raiders, making them a 2-point favorite in that game. But it was not to be. So the Titans, again, that was a huge victory for them. I tell you what, this dude, Mac Hollins, before I get into, you know, kind of breaking this game down a little bit, Mac Hollins had himself a day. 8 receptions, 158 yards. He had that touchdown that I spoke of. He had the 160-yard pass there that he got. You know, he got behind the Titans defense there. I think that was the one before halftime, I want to say, or it could have been that. It could have been on that last drive. I can't remember for sure, but huge game for Mac Hollins. Derek Carr, 26 for 44, 303 yards through the air, two touchdowns, and he did have an interception as well. Not a whole lot on the ground for the Raiders in this football game. He had Josh Jacobs, 13 attempts, 66 yards. Then behind that, you had Brandon Bolden, who had three attempts and 17, and that was about it, really. Well, you have two rushes for Derek Carr for 17 yards. They had a total, when you look at it, their team stats, total 396 yards, 307 through the air, and 96 on the ground. Very interesting. The Titans, a little bit less than them. 361 total, 264 passing yards for Ryan Tannehill on 19 of 27. He had one interception in the game. They had 109 yards rushing. The running game looked a little bit better. I'm not going to say actually it looked a great deal better than it did Monday night. I mean, it looked almost night and day from what it looked like Monday night. Derrick Henry really did some damage to the Raiders there in the first half. But he was hard to handle in a number of ways. I mean, because he had, look at his game, 85 yards on 20 attempts. Pretty much kind of very similar numbers to the game that he had against the Giants in week one. Had the touchdown early in the game in the first half. And then he had five receptions for 58 yards, really looking like Derrick Henry is supposed to look. But all of that was early in the game. And we're going to get in, you know, I'm going to get into the NFC South here in just a few minutes. And I'm going to talk about the New Orleans Saints. It's kind of reverse what we have going on with the Tennessee Titans. The New Orleans Saints are having all of their issues in the first half. And I guess maybe actually first, maybe three quarters of the game. And then they kind of, it seems like they kind of iron things out a little bit to a degree and are able to get on the scoreboard. The Titans were kind of the opposite. The Titans were scoring their points early. They scored all, you know, they scored 13 points in the first half against the Giants. They ended up only scoring the seven in the second half on that one drive. They scored their first touchdown last week against the Buffalo Bills. Did not score again, of course. And then they scored all 24 points in this game in the first half and did not touch the end zone, did not get a field goal or anything in the second half against the Raiders this past Sunday. That's pretty, man, that's a mystery of why that is happening. I'm not really sure I have the answer. I'm going to be real with you. I really don't know why that is. I mean, for me, obviously, you know, you sit there and you talk about the Titans, you talk about their offense, especially the fans of this football team. Normally, that conversation is going to go to Todd Downing, the offensive coordinator. So maybe, you know, maybe there's a disconnect there. Obviously, we're talking about some really questionable play calls with this dude in a lot of games. I mean, not just here in the first couple of weeks of this season or whatever. So, I mean, that is something to watch here going forward. Really good start, man. This offense looked really good. Now, you know, the Raiders, you know, I think probably a middle-of-the-pack type defense. They have a couple of really good guys like Crosby up front that you have to really deal with. But, you know, nothing great, but I think it's a pretty good defense. You know, I don't think they're bad. And the Titans look like you would expect them to look. Running the ball very well. The offensive line played a much better game than they played Monday night. They were actually getting off the ball, clearing some holes for Derrick Henry, providing time for Tannehill to throw the football downfield. And they did, and that was one thing that they absolutely did, and they did it early and often, with Tannehill throwing the ball downfield. We talked about that last week. And he actually found Robert Woods on a couple times. One long one, the 41-yarder to him, was a really good throw. Robert Woods had four receptions, 85 yards. Not great numbers, but much better than we've seen the first few weeks of the season. And so, again, it just seemed like things were opened up a little bit more than they were on Monday night. Again, and again, that's kind of why I said what I said last week. I mean, everybody was, you know, kind of wanting to jump off the bridge for what happened Monday night. And I'm just like, I just thought it was kind of a, you know, perfect storm, or, you know, bad way, not in a good way, what happened to the Titans last Monday night. I thought the Bills were amped up for that football game. We talked about it, how they had lost two in a row to the Titans. The Titans seemingly kind of had their number or whatever. The Bills obviously playing in front of their home crowd. That home crowd was juiced. It was Monday night. Their first game at home. All of those things, to me, made that game, you know, kind of turned that game to what it was, a blowout. It wasn't, I don't think, we sit down, you play that game nine more times, I don't think you're going to come out any of those times with a 41-7 defeat either way. So that's why, and you sit down and you look at how Buffalo played this past weekend against Miami. I mean, that was not the same Buffalo Bills team this past Sunday in Miami that we saw last Monday night against Tennessee. It was not the same team. So, no, the Titans did some things a lot better. Again, there is still cause for much concern with this football team, especially on the offensive end. And then really defensively as well, because, again, they're, giving up some big plays. I thought they were really kind of fortunate to not give up a few more points to Las Vegas the other day. Carr had a pretty good game. Again, they allowed Hollins to get off with 158 yards reception. I tell you what, you know, when you sit there thinking about the Raiders, Devontae Adams, he is off to a really slow start with that football team. He only had 36 yards receiving the other day. He did have the one touchdown there, the first score for the Raiders there in the first half. But I think when you look at it, you would definitely expect a lot more from Devontae Adams. Well, on the flip side of that, I kind of expect a little bit more from this Tennessee Titans defense. Again, you got some big plays there to secure the victory. That the Raiders had another trip down the goal line where the ball, Carr had the pass tipped in the air and Byard picked it off in the end zone. That was a huge stop for the Titans there in the second half. Again, not bad. I mean, they were able to get a little bit more pressure on Carr than they were able to get on Josh Allen on Monday night. But I still think it's a little bit of cause of concern. Obviously, we know that this team is missing Harold Landry and all of that, but I still expected a little bit more from this team up front as far as pressure from Jeffrey Simmons and all of those dudes. Rashad Weaver, he did have a sack in this game, which was good. But again, a better effort, much better effort. But I still think this team should be playing a little bit better than they are. And I expect them to do so. I think this team probably kind of got a wake-up call there in that Monday night game. I really do. So we'll see how it goes. But the Titans get that huge win, get the first win of the year against the Las Vegas Raiders. Let's go deeper into the AFC South, and we have a couple other huge games. The AFC South, it was kind of like AFC South versus AFC West Day in the National Football League. And except for the Texans were the oddball. They played the Chicago Bears, and they lost that game. The tight one, the Texans very competitive again, but the Texans come up short to the Chicago Bears there at Soldier Field. The other two games were, again, AFC South versus AFC West. Now, again, you sit there and you think about everybody talking the way they talk before the season and all off season, especially after the Raiders made all of the moves that they made, all of the moves that the Chargers made, the Chargers bringing in guys like, you know, to help their defense or whatever, and all of that. Everyone, and then, of course, the Broncos bringing in Russell Wilson and, you know, and all those moves that were made within the AFC West, everyone was like, the AFC West is going to be the dominant division in football. There are going to be three teams are going to come out of that division to get into the playoffs and all of that. And that still may happen. But on this particular Sunday, it did not happen. The AFC South ended up going 3-0 versus the AFC West. We just talked about the Titans' victory over the Raiders. The Indianapolis Colts, they hosted the Kansas City Chiefs, and they come out with a huge 20-17 victory over the Chiefs. The Chiefs kind of stuck in neutral offensively for the most part on this day. When you sit there, you go back and look at the stats, man. Really, really suffocating defense in a lot of ways for the Colts there at Lucas Oil Stadium. Chiefs only come up with 315 yards total, 262 through the air on 20 of 36 from Patrick Mahomes. They have 58 yards rushing on the, you know, on the ground. And again, now the Colts were only able to come up with 259 yards of their own. But some kind of way, the Colts were able to keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands. They ended up having the ball 33 minutes and 32 seconds versus the Chiefs' 26 and 28 seconds. So that was a huge difference. 7 minutes of time of possession, maybe kind of the difference in this football game when you really look at it. Obviously, a couple timely plays from the Colts' defense, a couple there toward the end of the game will really shape the end of that football game. And the Colts really come away with a huge victory, man. I think the biggest thing you talk about with the Indianapolis Colts right now, Matt Ryan, you sit there, you look at his numbers, 27 of 37, 222 yards. He did have two touchdowns. He was sacked 5 times, which is not good. Jonathan Taylor, 21 rushes for 71 yards, much better stats than he had last week in Jacksonville, that is for sure. Not great, but definitely a lot better. They got Michael Pittman back, and that is the big talk with the Colts right now. Obviously, the defense, you know, getting Shaq Leonard, he was not in uniform this past Sunday, but he was on the sideline rooting his team on big time, and they did a fantastic job without him. When you look at this receiving core, that is the huge question right now for the Indianapolis Colts. They did get Michael Pittman Jr. back. He had eight huge receptions. When you look at it, 72 yards, not a great game, but just having him out there makes a huge difference for this offense. I don't think there's any question about that. And obviously, it was, you know, where they could kind of keep some drives alive with them having that time of possession advantage, that probably was kind of the difference in the football game. One guy that did step up that I want to talk about, Alec Pierce, number 14. He had 3 receptions, 61 yards. Again, not great numbers, but the key right now for the Colts is to find, I think they're going to go ahead, obviously with Pittman being their kind of their number one guy, they need another guy or two to go along with him. And Pierce looks like he really could be that guy. He had a couple huge receptions in that football game. I know one that was a really good one there to move the chains. Really strong with the football. So maybe Alec Pierce is that guy that, you know, will be a good complement to Michael Pittman Jr. Still, they're going to need someone else as well. But that is at least a good start. They did have the touchdown pass, you know, two touchdown catches rather from Jelani Woods, the tight end number 80, and he was obviously he caught the one that was the game winner there late in the fourth quarter that sealed the deal for that 20-17 victory for the Colts. The other game that was the AFC West versus South special, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I bring them up last for a reason because this team. I talked about them briefly last week, man. I put it out there that this team very well could be the best team in the AFC South. And they made that statement look pretty damn good with that 38-10 demolition of the LA Chargers out there at SoFi Stadium. Humongous victory. They jumped on the Chargers early and often and just cruised to that huge victory there, 38-10. There was a lot of question whether Justin Herbert would play in the game due to injury. I think it was like maybe an hour before game time. I saw it on Twitter. It came out. Obviously, it was Adam Schefter broke the news that he was going to play. And I'm just going to be real with you. It looked like he probably should not have played. I mean, he did not look like the same guy. There's no question about that. But I'm going to say this. I don't think it would have mattered. I mean, you could have rolled the real Justin Herbert out there fully healthy. I don't think they win in that game this past Sunday. I don't. I think this Jacksonville Jaguars team is legit. That defense really looks really good. Trevor Lawrence, 28 of 39 offensively, with, you know, passing game, 28 of 39, 262 yards through the air, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Again, I talked about this duo in the backfield, man. Again, not great numbers from Travis Etienne. 13 carries, 45 yards. He did have 3 receptions for 30 yards there as well. So 75 yards total from him out of the backfield. But then you had James Robinson, 17 rushes, 100 yards, and a touchdown. He had the big 50-yard run for the touchdown on a 4th-and-1. The Chargers got caught. they got caught in their goal line defense or their short yardage defense or whatever, and James Robinson broke it, and there was no one left in the secondary or whatever, and he coasted to the house with that 50-yard rush for the touchdown. He also had 3 receptions, 16 yards. Look at Zay Jones. He had himself a pretty good game, 10 receptions, 85 yards. Christian Kirk, we talked about him last week, 6 receptions, 72 yards. Marvin Jones making a presence, 4 receptions, 33 yards. Each one of those guys got into the end zone as well. Each one of them had a touchdown reception in that football game. And again, we talked about the receivers last week as well. Not great. I don't think they have, you know, obviously they don't have a guy that you have to sit there and that's going to keep defensive coordinators up at night or up all week, the week that they play them or whatever. But they have a lot of solid, good, consistent receivers and that are right now just getting the job done, point blank simple. So, again, 38-10. They came into that game a 6.5-point dog, obviously going out there to L.A. The Jags improved to 2-1. The L.A. Chargers fall to 1-2. Slow start for them, to say the least. Let's look at the NFC South really quick, man. Now, you know what? Actually, we're going to take a quick break. Before we do so, we'll get into the NFC South when Ball About the South continues.
Straight out of our lids. Them, they got boo bodies, hard rock Brooklyn kids. Us, floor rush, when they DJ booming classics. You dig the crew on the fattest hip-hop record. He tucks the kinks and sinks into the sounds. She frequents deep, fatter joints called undergrounds. Our funk zooms like you hit the Mary Jane. They flock to booms, man, Boogie had to change. Who freaks the clips with mad amount percussion? Where kinky hair goes to unthought of dimensions? Why's it so fly? Cause hip-hop kept some drama. When Butterfly rocked the light blue suede boomers. What? By the cut, we push it off the corner. How was the buzz entire hip-hop era? Was fresh in fact since they started saying Audi? Cuz funk's made fat from right beneath my hood. The pooba of the styles like Miles and shit. Like 60s funky worms with waves and perms. Just sending junky rhythms right down your block. We beat to rap, what key beat to lock? But I'm cool like that. 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 I'm cool. I'm cool.
The chocolates taps on my raps. She innovates after sweet and cat naps. He at the funk club with the vibrate. Them they be crazy down with the 5 mate. It can kick a plan, then a crowd burst. Me, I be digging it with the smile, so I say hi. Who understood? Yeah, understood the plans. Him heard of it and put it to his hands. What I just flipped, let borders get loose. How to consume all the beaches like juice. If it's the shit, we'll lift it off the plastic. The babes will go spastic, hip-hop games a classic. Pimp playing sharp, it don't matter, I'm fatter. Axe butter how I zone.
Man, Cleopatra Jones.
And I'm chill like that, I'm chill like that. I'm chill like that, I'm chill like that. I'm chill like that, I'm chill like that. I'm chill like that, I'm chill.
Free, cause the clits be fat for us. Them dug the jams and commenced to go in awe. She sweats the beats and asks me cause she puppet. Me, I got crew, kids, seven and a crescent. Us cause a buzz when a nickel bags a dealt. Him, that's my man with the asteroid belt. They catch a fizz from the Mr. Doodle Big. He rocks a tee from the Brooklyn Nine Pigs. The rebirth is slick like my gangster stroll. The lyrics just like Luke come in stacks and rolls. You used to find the bug in a box with Babe. Now he boogies up your stage, plaits twist the braids. And I'm peace like that. 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 I'm peace.
Check it out, man. I groove like that. I'm smooth like that. I jive like that. I roll like that.
Yeah, I'm thick like that. I stack like that. I'm down like that. I'm black like that.
Yo, I funk like that. I'm fat like that. I'm in like that cause I swing like that.
We jazz like that. We freak like that. We zoom like that. We out. We out. We out.
All right, y'all, we're back in. Ball About the South continues, and we're going to get into the NFC South and actually close out this episode. This is the 35th episode of Ball About the South, and I really want to say that I appreciate you joining me here on this show. Let's get into the NFC South, and we'll start with those New Orleans Saints that I kind of teased about a little bit earlier in the show. 22-14 losers to the Carolina Panthers. Again, big time NFC South division matchup there in Charlotte, North Carolina. And again, it was the same story for the Saints offense. You know, the defense played well enough, obviously, because when you sit there and you look at it, the Panthers scored 22 points, but they had the one, they had seven of those points, the touchdown coming off the fumble from Alvin Kamara that was scooped up and run in for a touchdown for the Panthers. That was seven of their points right there. Okay, so really and truly, the Saints only gave up 15 points. You would take that every day of the week. But for whatever reason, this team, this offense is stuck in neutral. And it's really puzzling to really look at it because you look at the stats from this football game, and this is very similar from what we saw week one, even though they came up with the victory in Atlanta in week one. And, you know, to a large degree last week against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This team is getting off to really slow starts in the first half. And, you know, probably the big difference in this one is they really still never did really get totally in sync in the second half either, but they still played a lot better in the second half than they played in the first half for whatever crazy reason when they scored all their points there in the second half of this football game. And it's really, I really don't understand it because, and here's the thing that I look at when talking about the Saints. And for me, I think, and for really for any team that has a particular player or whatever that a lot of people either don't like or they have a particular player that has been known to have issues, like Jameis Winston, who threw obviously a lot of interceptions in his time there in Tampa Bay. Obviously, he was the butt of a lot of jokes A lot of people came down in on him for good reason for his play in Tampa with that football team while he was there. And so that stigma never really leaves you until you really give those people a reason to not continue to say the same things that they said. So you sit there and you look at Jameis Winston in this football game. He goes 25 of 41, 353 yards through the air. Now, the 353 yards through the air might be a little bit deceiving when you sit there and kind of break it down. He had the one touchdown, which was kind of crazy, to Marquez Callaway there late in the game that made it 22-14. He had the two interceptions. Really, what I want to focus on is the two interceptions because, again, when you sit there and you look at people that talk about Jameis Winston and say, well, the Saints lost. Okay, and then they look at Jameis Winston had two interceptions. Then sometimes they say, well, you know what? Maybe that's why they lost. But you sit there and you go back and look at those two interceptions, man. The first one was early in the fourth quarter where the ball was tipped at the line of scrimmage and picked off out of the air by the Carolina Panthers defender. Okay, well, obviously, you know, it wasn't a horrible interception by any means as far as Jameis just missing a read or not seeing a defender or just throwing into traffic or anything like that. It plagued him early in his career. It wasn't those type of interceptions, but it was an interception nonetheless, so obviously you have to blame him. But the second interception was on the last play of the game. It was a Hail Mary. It was a Hail Mary throw from the 10-yard line or something, because that was the last play and they were trying to possibly just throw something up in the air and maybe get a pass interference penalty or get a miracle and maybe try to have another shot to throw the ball into the end zone from midfield or whatever. So, really, the second interception is not on Jameis Winston. Yeah, he threw it, but, I mean, my goodness, that's the way it was. But you see some people on Twitter, and there are a lot of people that still completely hate Jameis Winston. Now, again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm his biggest fan or anything. I'm just trying to be real in my talk about this football game and breaking him down and breaking down the New Orleans Saints. And to sit here and blame Jameis Winston for the loss the other day or the loss against Tampa Bay, to me, just because he threw those interceptions, is not totally true. And that's the only thing I would say. So then when you look at the numbers look pretty good besides the interception. So it's really a mystery of why the Saints look so bad offensively, why they're not finishing drives. There are a lot of three and outs for this football team. It really doesn't make any sense. Alvin Kamara, 15 rushes, 61 yards. Obviously he's going to have to do a lot better than that. Really, when you sit there and you look at Alvin Kamara, you want to see the receptions out of the backfield. And he only had two receptions for 12 yards. Now, if you want to get down to it, in my opinion, the biggest criticism I have of Jameis Winston, he does not check the ball down when he should. I think he misses a lot of check downs. That was the thing I looked at that I noticed more this past Sunday than I had noticed even in previous games. He missed, I know, several check downs to Alvin Kamara. He missed a couple check downs to Trotman, the tight end. And that is a concern because obviously he's, you know, looking to throw downfield. Now, look, there's nothing wrong with trying to make a play downfield, but at certain times, especially if you just need to move the chains just to get a first down sometime, checking the ball down is the right thing to do. And I think if I had a criticism of him, that would be it. So that's something I think we're going to have to continue to watch. So other than that, I really don't understand why this team isn't scoring a few more points than they are. As you look at it, man, again, I think this backs up what I'm saying about not checking the ball down. Chris Olave had the game of his short NFL life so far. 9 receptions, 147 yards. Really huge game. Had a long pass of 49 yards. Traquan Smith, 4 receptions, 105 yards. Michael Thomas chimed in with 4-5 receptions, 49 yards. So, I mean, you're getting the numbers to your wide receivers. But Kamara, 2 receptions are not going to get it. It's not going to get it. And I think that is a big start of, you know, of where to look as far as, you know, trying to figure out what's wrong with the Saints offense. He's got to get Kamara much more involved than that. Look, the Panthers come away with a huge victory, though. You have to give them credit. I'm liking what I'm seeing out of Christian McCaffrey so far. He's not reached the end zone in the last couple of weeks, but he had 25 rushes, 108 yards. But he only had 2 receptions on 4 targets for 7 yards. So that's got to get better for the Carolina Panthers as well. They had a huge game from LaVisca Chenault. 2 receptions, 90 yards. He had the game-winning score with that huge touchdown. And this was the thing. The Saints got the game to within one score. The Saints had been down 13-0, I think it was. 14-0 or whatever in the game. They got the touchdown pass. They got the touchdown run, rather, by Mark Ingram. Cut it to one score. And then immediately after that, they give up this big pass to Chenault Jr., who just took it down the left sideline for 67 yards and put the Panthers right back up by 2 scores. That was a huge play in that game, and really just kind of broke the back of the Saints from there on. So, again, man, a huge win for the Panthers. You have to give them their credit for that. Baker Mayfield, looking again, he's not looking that great either. 12 of 25, throwing the football 170 yards, not good at all. Did have the one touchdown that I just talked about. But, huge victory for the Panthers, and the Saints are still left trying to figure out what's going wrong with their offense. In the other games, there in the NFC South, the Atlanta Falcons come away with a huge victory there in the Pacific Northwest against the Seattle Seahawks. They win that game 27-23. Cordarrelle Patterson had a really good game. Marcus Mariota played pretty decent. Did have one interception, but he had one touchdown pass as well. 13 of 20, 229 yards. Patterson, 141 yards on the ground. Really huge game by him. Kyle Pitts, 5 receptions, 87 yards on 8 targets. Drake London had the big touchdown reception there in the second half. 3 receptions, 54 yards. Really good game for the Atlanta Falcons on a huge road victory for them. And you sit there and look at it, man. The Falcons could easily be 2-1. And then, you know, look, I'm not going to sit here and say that they could have or should have won the Rams game, because they were down 28-3. I think the Rams took their foot off the gas pedal. But the Falcons could have easily been 2-1 right now. Instead, they are 1-2 on the season. And then, of course, the other game, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we all know, we're all kind of waiting for that game to a degree. with the Brady versus Aaron Rodgers bowl. And it kind of went about how I thought it was going to go. I was not looking for a lot of offense in that football game. And then, of course, the Packers jump out 14-0, like seemingly as soon as they kicked the ball off or whatever. I was like, whoa, 14-3 rather. And I was like, whoa, you know, I was not expecting that from the Packers against this Bucs defense. But then the Bucs defense really settled in and they did not give up another point. Unfortunately, they didn't score many of their own. They only scored 12. Obviously, we know about all the injuries going on with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and that wide receiver core. Brady ended up having to throw the football 42 times in a game like that. You know, that type of math does not compute, because they weren't down that much. But, you know, they felt like they had to throw themselves back into the game. So he had 31 of 42 on the day, 271 yards, and had the touchdown pass. But when you sit there and really look at it, the numbers look a lot better than the performance. There's no question about that. The running game was non-existent. We had Fournette with 12 rushes, 35 yards. nothing at all out of the run game. Russell Gage was the big guy receiving 13 targets. You know, again, he had the suspension with Mike Evans. Godwin was not available either. Julio Jones did not play. So, you know, they ended up having to bring Cole Beasley into the lineup, who he actually had 4 targets and 3 receptions. But, you know, there's not enough there for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to really muster up enough offense to win a game like that, and they still almost won it. But, again, Russell Gage was the big guy receiving 12 receptions, 12 for 87 yards on 13 targets, and he had the touchdown reception there. Cameron Brate, the tight end, had 5 receptions and 52 yards himself. So, again, not a whole, I mean, just not a lot of offense. And you wouldn't expect it. You just wouldn't. And they still nearly won the game. If they don't have those delay game penalties there on the goal line, I think we're probably talking about a tie game and overtime and who knows what happens after that. So, you know, the Green Bay Packers get their second win of the season, and the Bucks fall to 2-1. But if I'm a Packers fan, I'm not feeling too hot about that victory. Just the fact that they got it, that's it. And it was the second time that Aaron Rodgers has beaten Tom Brady in his career. Other than that, there's not a whole lot to be excited about if you're a Packers fan either right now. So I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, once they get some guys healthy, they're going to be just fine going forward. Anyway, man, we're going to I want to give out my game balls. I'm, you know, for the NFL and for the SEC and for today, man. In the NFL, I've got to go with Trevor Lawrence. I mean, the game that he had, I've got to go with someone from that Jacksonville football team. I could say the defense as a whole holding the Chargers to only 10 points. But I'll go with Trevor Lawrence, who he had a 3-touchdown game there against the Chargers. Really big-time game. And he gets my game ball in the NFL. And in the SEC, I'm going back to Knoxville. Hendon Hooker, the quarterback of the Tennessee Volunteers. Huge game, 22 of 28 through the air, 349 yards, 2 touchdowns. Hendon Hooker also 12 rushes, 111 yards. He scored a touchdown there as well. Humongous game. So I've got to go with him as my baller in the SEC. Tell you, one of the other good guy in that football game that really had a good game, Jabari Small, the running back. He had 90 yards rushing in that football game and had a couple good receptions there as well. So, but I'm going to go Hendon Hooker with Tennessee Vols. The quarterback is my baller of the week in the SEC. Quickly, man, let's look at some of the HBCU scores and SWAC and everything from this past weekend. The big game around the conference, I would say a lot of the conference games, you know, really starting up. You had 4 or 5 of them. The big game there in FAMU in Tallahassee, 38-25 winners over the Alabama A&M Bulldogs. The Bulldogs still winless on the season. They go to 0-4. FAMU, after that horrible start to the season, has gotten back to 2-2. So that is a good thing for them. You look at that UAPB, the Arkansas Pine Bluff game against Alcorn State. The Alcorn State Braves, the 38-21 victors in that football game. Both of those teams go to 2-2. Alabama State going down at home to Prairie View A&M, 25-15. Big-time win for Prairie View there in Montgomery. Grambling gets a big-time loss to Bethune-Cookman. How about Bethune-Cookman coming up with a huge win down there in Daytona Beach, 36-19 over the Grambling Tigers. And then the other conference game, actually, Jackson State Tigers doing their thing to their in-state rivals, Mississippi State Delta Devils, 49-7 victory over them as they go to 4-0. The Delta Devils go to 0-4. Then you go back. The other game, the other team, Texas Southern, of course, they played out of conference against Texas San Antonio, and they come up, unfortunately, with a 52-24 loss to Texas San Antonio. So there you have it, man. A lot going on this past weekend. What a crazy weekend of football, both on Saturday and Sunday, that we had to enjoy. And we're looking forward to another big-time week of football coming up. And we're going to do another show here a little bit later in the week. Probably get that show out to you on Thursday. Coming to you recording on Monday night for this show right here. So we're going to get this one out here in the morning or sometime tomorrow on Tuesday. And then we'll come back at you again with another show as we preview the upcoming action coming up this coming weekend. Definitely be on the lookout for that right here on Ball About the South. Anyway, man, I do want to thank you again for coming in to check me out. Check out Ball About the South. I do hope that you will like, share, subscribe, do all those things. If you like the show, please do all of that and let everyone else know that how good a show Ball About the South is so we can move this thing forward together. All right, man. Anyway, my name is Kerry Wood, at C Wood on Sports on Twitter and on IG. On Twitter and IG is where you can find me. And until next time, man, I am out.